Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about on today's program. Plus, we invite your phone calls, 888-302-3684. That's our number. You can call us with questions related to intelligent medicine. That means the best of high-tech medicine, the best of natural therapies. That is an intelligent choice these days because we need to blend those modalities to enhance our health and to combat all the health challenges that we face today. 888-302-3684. And as I watch this broadcast, we got a TV monitor in the studio, and it's muted. And a very peculiar thing is happening on cable news. We're watching live shots of an ambulance, which is proceeding from the airport in Atlanta to Emory University Hospital, and the ambulance presumably contains two Americans who are victims of the deadly Ebola virus. And a little later in the program, I'm going to provide you with a perspective on that virus. Is this the beginning of the zombie apocalypse? We're actually intentionally bringing Ebola into America. So here I sit in the studio, negative pressure. I'm wearing my booties and my gloves and my hood and my breather. And so far so good. In a little while, we'll provide you with an intelligent medicine perspective on the Ebola pandemic. Now it's being called a pandemic because it's spreading rampantly through Africa, and now two American victims of the Ebola virus have been transported to the heart of America. 888-302-3684. A couple of weeks ago, I did a story on organic produce and how it is superior. It was in our newsletter, and now it's posted at drhoffman.com. It got a lot of hits because it's an important story, and it has to do with the ongoing debate over whether organic is superior to conventional produce. And we know that organic is free of pesticides, but the nutritional value of organic produce was subject to debate. It has been said that organic produce, it's kind of a ripoff, right? I mean, get conventional produce because, you know, you're an effete hippie and you want to eat organic and it costs more. But why go there? Because conventional produce is just as good, just as nutritious. But it turns out, according to a new study, that organic produce is actually more nutritious when we measure nutritional value. And you can read about it at drhoffman.com. That's not what this particular feature that I'm going to share with you is about. This has to do with the harmful effects of pesticides, and they are far more pervasive than we once thought. And in that particular article, I noted many of the harmful effects of pesticides. They can be carcinogenic. They can have hormonal effects, dangerous effects. They can be endocrine disruptors. They can affect the thyroid. They can affect the reproductive organs. And on it goes. But at the time that I wrote that article, I wasn't aware of these facts, and so I'm going to share this with you as kind of an addendum to the organic story. Again, you can check it at drhoffman.com. I'm going to quote to you now from the Bible. This is the New Living Translation of the Old Testament, Numbers chapter 14, verse 18. And in a moment, you're going to see why I'm making this little digression. The Lord is slow to anger and filled with unfailing love, forgiving every kind of sin and rebellion. But he does not excuse the guilty. He lays the sins of the parents upon their children. The entire family is affected, even children in the third and fourth generations. So you've heard variations of this. In the King James Bible, the language is a little more archaic and flowery. It's the iniquity of the parents are passed along to the children. But this notion, unto the third and fourth generations, that sounds pretty harsh, doesn't it? Well, key in this new story, pesticides linked to three generations of disease. Methoxychlor causes epigenetic changes. This story from Washington State University. Researchers say that ancestral exposure to the pesticide methoxychlor, just one among thousands of different agents that we apply to our plants, may lead to adult onset kidney disease, ovarian disease, and obesity, not just in the generation exposed to this pesticide, but in future generations. What your great-grandmother was exposed to during pregnancy, like the pesticide methoxychlor, may promote a dramatic increase in your susceptibility to develop disease. And you will pass this on to your grandchildren in the absence of any continued exposures. I repeat, in the absence of any continued exposures. This is scary. Methoxychlor, it goes by various names, Chem-4, Methoxo, Matox, Moxie, was introduced in 1948, widely used in the 1970s as a safer replacement for DDT. We'll get to DDT in just a moment. But it was banned in 2003, so we think we're in the clear. But no, its legacy lives on. Researchers exposed gestating rats to methoxychlor at a range that's typical of environmental exposure that humans might have acquired, and they saw increases in the risk of kidney disease, ovarian disease, and obesity in offspring spanning three generations. That means the great-grandchildren. This is called transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. And it means that the genes are modified and are passed along to the offspring. So this is super scary. And oh, by the way, one of the consequences of this is obesity, a higher susceptibility to overweight, because these pesticides poison the metabolism, slow it down, and thereby you develop metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and the inability to properly burn your fat. So the suggestion is that, you know, even though we've banned some of these pesticides, our exposure over the past 50 years may play a part in today's increasing rates of obesity and disease. Now, let's take a look at DDT, banned years ago. Remember Silent Spring, Rachel Carson, one of the first environmental calls to action? Well, if you read editorials in newspapers like the Wall Street Journal, they're saying, why have we banned DDT? DDT wasn't so bad after all. Malaria is a terrible problem in Africa. It kills literally millions of people. And why don't we just bring back DDT? Because, well, you know, it's a risk-benefit equation. Yeah, it's, you know, potentially harmful, but it's really not as bad as they say. And, oh, by the way, malaria is a terrible disease, and we haven't eradicated it with drugs. So here's a story about DDT. Pesticide DDT linked to slow metabolism, obesity, and diabetes in future generations. Okay? This study looks at pregnant mice, exposure to DDT linked to an increased risk of obesity, diabetes, high cholesterol, and related conditions. So, you know, if you think your cholesterol level is merely related to the fact that you had a couple of fried eggs this morning, think again, because many of us to this day carry residues of these harmful pesticides. They're very slow to degrade in the environment. And even as their levels in the environment dissipate, we carry in our genes the inheritance of our forebears. The sins of the parents are upon their children. The entire family is affected, even children in the third and fourth generations. The Bible nailed it when it comes to pesticides. 888-302-3684. You know, another great reason to eat organic, because not only is the nutritional value greater, but the potential hazards of these pesticides far underestimated. Our kids, pregnant women, and all of us need to avoid them. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Whether you are getting ready for a once-in-a-lifetime vacation, flying to a business meeting, or just visiting friends, don't risk ruining your trip by neglecting to protect your digestive health. Pack award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, one of the best lines of defense against traveler's tummy. Dr. O'Hara's convenient blister packs are portable and never need to be refrigerated, perfect for traveling. Backed by over 25 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics use 12 strains of live, beneficial bacteria, combined in a centuries-old Japanese fermentation process. The result is a superior supplement that enhances immunity and digestion, which helps reduce the risk of getting sick while traveling. Stay healthy while traveling and remember to pack your probiotics. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics.
Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Did you know that doctors recommend omega-3 essential fatty acids for kids and grown-ups alike? Nordic Naturals, the number one fish oil in the U.S., offers omega-3s for everyone. In fact, Nordic Naturals has one of the largest product portfolios in the world. Our best-selling Ultimate Omega is available in soft gels or liquid, both with a light, clean lemon flavor and no fishy aftertaste. This concentrated formula has been clinically shown to support heart health. For children, kids everywhere love Nordic Naturals Children's DHA, offered in great-tasting strawberry liquid or chewable soft gels. New Omega Boost is a creamy, delicious formulation of omega-3s. With its great mango taste and velvety smooth texture, Nordic Naturals Omega Boost is a great choice for the whole family. Nordic Naturals carefully manages every step of production of our omega-3 fish oils from boat to bottle, so you can count on Nordic Naturals to be exceptionally pure, fresh, and effective. Nordic Naturals for kids and grown-ups alike. Available at natural products retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. All right, this week I did a podcast on the subject of marijuana, pro and con. It was accompanied by an article in our newsletter, which you can now access at drhoffman.com, about marijuana, because this week, or actually it was last weekend in the Sunday Times, they came out with a clarion call on their op-ed page for legalization of marijuana. Their argument is, well, they say, look, it's not as bad as alcohol. I mean, think alcohol and the terrible toll that it causes socially. And, oh, by the way, according to the Times, it stigmatizes so many young men in particular, predominantly minority, who get in trouble for smoking pot, and they get arrested, they have an arrest record, and it ruins their lives. So let's legalize this. Admittedly, they say that kids should not smoke marijuana. It should be for adults over 21. But you know how that goes. You know, when stuff is legal and available, you know, cigarettes are not legal for folks under 21. Same thing with alcohol in most states. And look what happens. Look what happens. It's there. It's free and available. And it can be accessed. So in those articles, I argue that we should not be so cavalier about legalizing marijuana. There are some definite harms associated with marijuana. In particular, its potential to cause serious brain changes in especially younger individuals. It remodels the brain, maybe permanently. To cause sort of a Cheech and Chong amotivational syndrome, right? You know, it's definitely associated with poor academic performance, lowered IQ, and lack of initiative. And that's not something we need in this country at this time, with all the potential problems, use of heavy use of alcohol by kids. Just add another element. And oh, by the way, when you drive and you're drunk, it's very easy to use a breathalyzer to detect that you've got above a certain level of alcohol in your bloodstream. And when it comes to pot, we don't have such good ways of detecting that. So there's going to be tremendous amounts of automotive and vehicular mayhem when people have more access to pot. But you can read those articles for a more complete discussion. But I came across a great editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine entitled Big Marijuana, Lessons from Big Tobacco. And they make some excellent points. They say that the marijuana industry, it's the real deal. They've already formed their own advocacy organization, the National Cannabis Industry Association, to protect and advance its corporate interests. They see a huge, a huge horizon for marijuana sales once it's legal. And they point out, and I'm quoting, the marijuana industry will have unprecedented opportunities for marketing on the internet, because marketing in 2014 is much more sophisticated than in the 1950s and 60s, you know, when we had Joe Camel and the Marlboro Man to entice kids to smoke. You know, look how many kids are slamming down Red Bull and cheap forms of sugar pop alcoholic drinks because it's cool. Regulation is minimal on the internet. They can do third-party tracking and data mining. This has become extremely lucrative, and they're proficient at it. And when applied to a harmful, addictive commodity, these marketing innovations could be disastrous. The strategy poses a particular threat to young people because adolescents are more likely than adults to seek novelty and try new products, and they succumb to peer pressure. And studies show that children who use marijuana are up to four times as likely as adults to become chronic heavy users. And, oh, the Times poo-poos the idea that marijuana is a gateway drug. Well, no, it is to some extent. I mean, look, there's lots of folks who smoke a couple of joints and do it a little bit when they're young, and then they stop, and then they go on to using heavier drugs. But according to research, marijuana use rewires the reward centers of the brain, making the brain crave more stimulation from more powerful drugs, drugs like cocaine, methamphetamine. That's a rampant problem in this country. Prescription pills, and ultimately things like heroin. So, they make some good points here in the New England Journal, which I don't always agree with. But here, I think they nailed it. The tobacco industry has provided a detailed roadmap for marijuana. They say that the marijuana folks are going to do the same thing that big tobacco did in the 50s and 60s. They're going to deny the addictive potential. They're going to use junk science to downplay adverse health effects. They're going to create as large a market as possible, as quickly as possible. And then they're going to protect that market because they got a lot of bucks through lobbying, campaign contributions to vulnerable politicians. Hey, this is a great way to get elected in some states. Hey, I'm going to legalize marijuana. That's going to be really cool. And other advocacy efforts. And they point out that it took a really long time. It took the medical and public health communities 50 years, millions of lives, and billions of dollars, and I'm quoting, to identify the wake of illness and death left by legal industrialized cigarettes. Can you imagine what it's going to be like to have neat packaged marijuana cigarettes that are going to be perfectly rolled with colorful, imaginative, creative logos and beautiful graphics? It took 50 years, millions of lives, and billions of dollars to identify the wake of illness and death left by legal industrialized cigarettes. The free market approach to tobacco clearly failed to protect the public's welfare and the common good. They just sort of, you know, they said, look, laissez-faire, right? Hey, you know, it's right. You're right. You can smoke cigarettes if you want. If you don't, fine. I mean, look, there are people both on the left and the right who support legalization of marijuana. They're the libertarian Republicans who say, oh, it's our right to do whatever we want. You know, let industry have free reign. Public health considerations have already pushed tobacco into the shadows. And why are we opening up the floodgate for marijuana use? It defies logic. In spite of recent federal regulation, they point out tobacco use remains the leading cause of death in the United States. So do we need this? Do we need yet another plague upon our populace? And I point that out in a podcast and an article this week. You can find them at drhoffman.com. Tell me what you think. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shop, and other fine natural products retailers.
A regular dose of intelligent medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Do you enjoy listening to the sound of my voice? Well, perhaps there is a reason. A new study looks at the unique vocal cord vibration patterns that might be the secret behind a good radio voice. Because there really is something about a voice for radio. I'm not sure that I embody that, but some people say that they enjoy the sound of my voice. That they can't for the life of them remember what I've said on the program. But they say, well, I like listening to you. Well, what did I say? Well, I forgot, but it sounded good, and I enjoy listening to you. The world's first study filmed the vocal folds of 16 male radio performers, including announcers, broadcasters, newsreaders, and voiceover artists, and found their vocal folds move and close faster than non-broadcasters. There's something unique about their vocal abilities. Their vocal cords are like gymnasts or acrobats at the Olympic level. Most radio voices are unique in their depth, warmth, or resonance. But until recently, we have been unable to pinpoint what is happening physically with the vocal folds to achieve these qualities. I'll turn to our audio engineer and producer, Al Peterson. Al, you want to weigh in on that?
Doctor, hello.
And you have a great set of pipes, Al.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, you know, so it turns out that we in the radio business may have some unique attribute. Our ability to vibrate our vocal cords at a more rapid rate. Do you do that consciously? Are you vibrating your vocal cords more rapidly?
It's a tough thing to wrap my head around, because if it's... So besides being an announcer, I'm also an engineer, and when something vibrates faster, the pitch is usually higher, mm-hmm. like a piano
like
string.
Like a soprano or something. Right.
So yeah. All I'm guessing is that the action of it, the vocal cords or the vocal folds snap back faster. They don't vibrate faster. They just close quicker. So go ahead.
Creating a more distinctive enunciation of words.
I guess. A lot of it also comes from sinuses, the thoracic cavity, you know, chest tone, all that stuff.
And right.
The fact that we deliberately speak, you know, just a little deeper than most. If you watch the old Mary Tyler Moore Show and watch Ted Knight in action.
Exactly.
Remember that?
Yeah, that kind of radio voice, you know, like, hey, Rocco, you know, that whole thing is kind of passe, right?
Yeah, pretty much. In the day, we used to call them pukers, because they did that voice like, it's a good look at Wednesday, how you doing?
Exactly.
And
that's
been gone for years. A lot of it, too, don't smoke, easy does it on the dairy, all that kind of thing. It's a whole discipline.
Au contraire, I have to say that some of the best broadcasters, you know, like Eric Severide and Edward R. Murrow, of that generation, they're big smokers. Every time you saw Edward R. Murrow on, and he had a voice that was almost like tan.
Oh, yeah.
It was like he tanned his vocal cords with cigarettes. It was deep. It was resonant. It was like husky and sort of sexy, you know.
Early in my day, when I was in college, there were certain announcers we admired. I went to college in New York, and I heard, you know, a lot of these big guy, you know, the great big voices. We all envied them. We wanted to sound like them after we got out of our college voice way up here. You know, stop doing that. But as soon as we found out it was caused by smoking damage, we're like, I don't want that.
Exactly.
Not want that.
You wanted the result, but you didn't want the risk.
Right.
All right. So, hey, I'm vibrating my vocal cords as fast as I can to sound good. All right. Thanks for that, for your input.
Oh, sure.
Al, this one's interesting. You know, all the talk about low-carb diets, and, you know, that's a big theme on this program. You know, Americans have long been fat phobic, and we're finally turning the corner on that. And this is an aberration because we had the food pyramid that reigned supreme, and it was wrongheaded because they said have, you know, 6 to 12 servings of whole grains. That was the base of the pyramid, and it was a disaster because Americans' weights skyrocketed during that period of time. So now we're turning it around, and we're beginning to finger carbs, not fats, as the cause of obesity and diabetes. Dr. Atkins was a pioneer in that field, but now the other diets, like the paleo diet, emphasize reduction of complex, refined carbohydrates, but even complex carbohydrates and grains as being part of the problem. But here's a survey. This is the Gallup poll, and it really shows how far behind the American public is in adopting this message, although there is a little bit of movement away from dependency on carbohydrates. First of all, a high percentage of Americans are worried about their weight. Nearly half of Americans worry about their weight, some or all of the time, according to a Gallup poll conducted in July of this year. But nearly twice as many Americans say they're actively trying to avoid fat in their diet, 56%, as say they're actively avoiding carbohydrates, 29%. There is, however, a movement towards acceptance of fat, even though we now have studies that suggest that saturated fat is not the culprit when it comes to cardiovascular disease. And many studies are suggesting that saturated fat is not the culprit when it comes to cancer, as was once thought. Still, Americans have swallowed the fat is evil message. I can't tell you how many times when I see new patients, you know, ask, well, what type of diet are you on? Well, they try to avoid fat. No, wrong. What about healthy fats, beneficial omega-3 fatty acids and fats you get from one of my favorite foods, avocados, fat from coconut oil? These fats are beneficial. So the two most common types of diet on the market when it comes to weight loss are low-fat and low-carb diets. And here's what they found among dieters. They found that 29% of Americans at any given time are dieting. I think that's an underestimate, but I guess maybe, you know, people are watching it. I guess dieting means they're really serious about weight loss. They found that 4 in 10 Americans say they try to include carbohydrates. They want to eat lots of whole grains. Yet this is down slightly from the half who said so in 2002. And the heyday of low-carb dieting was 2004 when the Atkins diet was fashionable. Then it was 33%. Now it's 41% want to include carbs in their diets. Americans trying to lose weight strongly avoid fats. 29% of Americans say they're trying to lose weight. Of these, nearly 3/4, 73% say they're trying to avoid fats. Among the 29% who are dieting, 44% are trying to avoid carbohydrates. 73% try to avoid fat, 44%. So this is probably one of the reasons why we can't seem to make progress against obesity. And doctors are guilty of this, and organizations like the American Heart Association, with their low-fat diet advice, they're perpetuating this epidemic of obesity and metabolic syndrome by continuing to reinforce the myth that fat is the culprit when, for the most part, what I see in my practice, carbohydrates, excess carbohydrate consumption leads to metabolic syndrome, diabetes, high cholesterol, weight gain, and a host of problems, even cancer. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684, if you care to call in. If not, I've got lots to talk about this hour, so stay tuned for more of Intelligent Medicine.
This traffic report from the bloodstream brought to you by Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Well, that inbound blood flow is really slowing down now due to plaque from cholesterol, but help's on the way from Kyolic. More than 750 peer-reviewed research studies indicate that Kyolic not only keeps circulation moving smoothly, it also helps improve a number of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is made from 100% organically grown garlic is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Look for Kyolic at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Help keep your system stay humming along with Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract today.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works.
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Okay, we talked about aspirin therapy, you know, that whole thing of baby aspirin. You know, if you're over 40 or over a certain age, everyone, they say, or they said, until recently, should be taking an aspirin for prevention. After all, it thins the blood, it prevents heart attacks, it may even, according to some studies, have preventive effects against colon cancer. So they say everybody should be taking it. And recently, they reassessed that, and they said no, because the harms may outweigh the benefits, and that only people who are at higher risk of cardiovascular problems, perhaps they have very high cholesterol, or they've had a heart attack, or they've had a stent, bypass, these are the people who really need to be on aspirin. Yet the belief still prevails that people should be taking aspirin a day for prevention, and they've tried to perpetuate this, and it's very inculcated in the consciousness of Americans. All right, I got an article here that's getting absolutely no play, no publicity. Nobody knows about this, but you need to know about it. Headline, small bowel mucosal damage with low-dose aspirin therapy. All right, what's the small bowel? It's also referred to as the small intestine. The most obvious problem that you can get when you take aspirin is you can get an ulcer. But the ulcers occur in the stomach. And if you don't get an ulcer, they say, fine, you're successfully tolerating your aspirin. But this article appears in a gastroenterology journal in May of this year. And what they found was that low-dose aspirin, 75 to 325 milligrams per day. Remember, low-dose aspirin, 81 milligrams, so-called baby aspirin, 325, that's the full dose. So even the low dose is associated with small intestine damage. And so researchers looked, they were in Japan, they looked at data from 205 people, patients taking low-dose aspirin, and they scoped them before and they scoped them after initiating the aspirin therapy. Remember, this is low dose. And what they found was that 57% had at least one mucosal lesion detected by endoscopy. You could actually see it. Now, you might say, well, okay, what if I take enteric-coated aspirin? That's better, right? Because it's slow release and it's, you know, protects the intestinal mucosa. No. Use of enteric-coated aspirin, so-called Ecotrin, popular brand of enteric-coated aspirin, was associated with increased risk for mucosal lesions. All right, what about if you take an acid blocker? That's going to help, right? They often do that. They say, well, take aspirin, but take an acid blocker. They do this very often in the hospital. They'll say, well, you know, you're in the hospital, you're taking aspirin, take an acid blocker to prevent the damage that the aspirin is going to cause. No, it increased it. The use of proton pump inhibitors, medications like Dexilant and Protonix and Nexium, increased the use for mucosal breaks when you were taking low-dose aspirin therapy. So this is a problem. And here's another problem. is even if you can't see the damage in your small intestine is the site where you absorb nutrients. And even if you can't see and visualize holes in your intestine caused by the aspirin, you may have what's called leaky gut syndrome. This is a big theme in medicine today, because leaky gut syndrome means that bad things, bacterial residues, and food particles, allergenic food particles, can enter via the holes in the small intestine and go through the systemic circulation and wreak havoc in other parts of the body, causing arthritis, causing potential brain effects, causing systemic toxicity throughout the system. So leaky gut syndrome, promoted by even low-dose aspirin use, and no, the enteric-coated aspirin didn't help, and concomitant use of an acid blocker didn't help, made it worse. This is a huge problem. In the study, 58% of people taking even low-dose aspirin suffered from this. We really need to reevaluate routine aspirin use, because it could lead to a whole host of problems. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
For more Intelligent Medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Okay, lightning round here. I'm going to go through a series of nutritional shorts. A new study published in the July issue of the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research should be reassuring for especially postmenopausal women who are taking calcium. You know, the issue of calcium as sometimes causing cardiovascular disease has come up recently. Suggestion is that if you take a lot of calcium, it may deposit, instead of in your bones, in your arteries. But this study is the fifth study in the last couple of years to reaffirm calcium's safety. It turns out that the benefits of calcium occur at every life stage, and it's important for women to obtain calcium. And it does not, I repeat, does not, according to this series of studies, cause or increase the risk of cardiovascular disease. All right, this is making the rounds. Fist bumps preferable to handshakes. Actually did a study on this. The American Journal of Infection Control found that fist bumps transferred about 90% less bacteria than handshakes. So U.S. President Barack Obama is very au courant. I, however, am very retro. I'm just sort of stuck at the stage where we do the soul handshake, you know, with the thumbs interlocked. I guess that's not good. The study used participants who wore gloves that had been thoroughly coated in a film of E. coli bacteria. That sounds yucky, but they weren't the dangerous kind. And they shook hands or high-fived and fist-bumped. High-five slaps transferred about half the amount of bacteria as shaking hands, because it's kind of quick, right? Shaking hands is a lot of contact. So do what you will with that information. And chili peppers for a healthy gut. Spicy chemical may inhibit gut tumors. They discovered that the active ingredient in chili peppers, capsaicin, may help to reduce the risk of colorectal tumors. This article was in the Journal of Clinical Investigation, August 1st of 2014. And finally, this takes the cake. The French hospital to open wine bar to cheer up terminally ill patients. Imagine a wine bar in a hospital. A hospital in the French city of Clermont-Ferrand is to open a wine bar where terminally ill patients will be able to enjoy a medically supervised glass or two with their families. Why should we refuse the charms of the soil to those at the end of their lives? Nothing justifies such a prohibition, says the president of the hospital there in France. So I guess France is the place to go if you're on your last legs. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. We've got lots more coming up, including a discussion of the Ebola epidemic.